Hey gang, before we get into this next episode, can I just say it would mean the world to me if you can go ahead and like this episode and also subscribe to the YouTube channel if you haven't yet. Plus, if you enjoy the episode, sharing the content with your friends, family, coworkers, or anyone else you think might benefit from what you're hearing, it helps so much. It's not just about the algorithm, it's about sharing the ideas that are being talked about on this show and creating more community through compassion. So again, if you enjoy the show and you like what you're hearing, don't be afraid to subscribe. It means more than you can possibly know. And frankly, at the end of the day, it means that we get to engage more with each other, and that's really what this is all about. Hey gang, I'm Nikhil Croce, and on today's episode, I'm sharing the mic with Walt Thiessen. Walt is the host of LOA Today, the podcast about living in our abundance with the law of attraction. Walt founded LOA Today in 2012 with the intention of helping listeners achieve and maintain their highest vibration by giving them their daily dose of happy. Welcome to the show, Walt. I love your mission. I'm so happy that you're here.
Oh, I'm glad to be here. And as you know, you were on my podcast. We had a blast. Absolute. Total blast. I think we had you on twice because once wasn't enough. So yeah, I'm more than happy to return the favor.
Well, I appreciate that. I had such a great time on your show. It was so wonderful and humbling to be welcomed back so quickly. First episode we did together was with your one co-host, Jody Lynn Craven, who right. just a really great energy as well. And it was such a wonderful conversation. Felt like I was just talking to people that, I'd maybe known for a lifetime, but just kind of bringing together those shared experiences. Yeah. And it's really inspiring to just kind of hear the different types of people that you have on your show. So I'd love to maybe just kind of start the conversation. And as I said, we can kind of see where it goes, but you've been doing this for really almost 12 years now. What was the catalyst for getting you into your podcasting journey?
Poverty and a business crash. I mean, it was just that simple.
Hey, I can relate.
The 2008 financial crisis wiped my business off the map. And my business had nothing to do with real estate, nothing to do with mortgages, nothing to do with what happened. It was collateral damage. But all of my customers were very, 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 very small nonprofit organizations around the country. And in a financial crisis, nobody gives money to a small nonprofit organization. So they all went poof, every single one of them. It was gone in a month, which was scary by itself. And then I was married at the time. My ex-wife also had a business. She had a gardening service business. And of course, nobody spends money on gardening during a financial crisis because that's just we do that for fun.
It's
we
a
do
luxury,
that.
Right?
Yeah, it's a luxury. Yeah, we don't need that. So our entire income disappeared, which was terrifying. I spent the next 4 years trying to recover, trying to rebuild from scratch. Succeeded to a small extent, but I wasn't doing really well, and I didn't understand why it wasn't working. I wasn't doing anything different. Why didn't it work this time around? Now, part of it was the changing landscape of what I was doing. I was working in the web design, web hosting space. And that's when the free website services came along and so forth. So that had definitely shifted how the whole thing worked.
Yeah. So it's sort of like a natural transition, regardless of the crisis that happened, almost like a it's sort of what I refer to as being given a violent shove into the present moment.
Good
like, what are you going to do now?
Yeah. But in the midst of all that, you're terrified because you're still trying to figure out how to pay the bills. God, where's the rent money coming from this month,
100%.
Oh my goodness. So after about 4 years of that, we were deeper and deeper in debt. Finances were just horrible. And I didn't know how to fix it. I didn't know what was wrong. I'd heard about law of attraction, and I remember hearing about the movie The Secret and how Oprah Winfrey had done a thing on it, but I didn't know anything about it. I went and got a copy of the movie. I watched it. It was like, okay, yeah, this is kind of like what they used to teach about positive thinking back in the 80s and 90s, but I still don't really see how it actually works and how do I apply that to my situation because I thought I'm pretty positive. What's going on? What am I doing wrong? And problem was, of course, I was broke. I had no money, so I couldn't hire a coach. I like to joke, I couldn't even hire a book. I couldn't go buy a book because I couldn't afford a book. So I said, well, I'll start a podcast, And I figured I could do that for free. I knew this is even before Zoom. It was before all the, Spotify, all the major stuff that we have today.
So I was going to say way ahead of the game, honestly. Like I think 2012, I'm not thinking podcasts. I can tell you that.
Yeah. Well, and you kind of had to figure it out for yourself. I mean, literally, I had to go find a piece of software that would tap my phone line so that I could record a phone call and turn it into a podcast.
Oh, wow.
That was the only way I could do it.
Yeah.
That's what you were dealing with at that time. I knew how to do it, but I mean, it was a heck of a way to do a podcast.
Right.
But I was so desperate. I figured, well, I could do this for free. I can bring experts in who know the subject and who are perhaps, you know, experts at being successful in business or whatever it might be. And they can come in and teach me. And it worked. It worked great. So, I mean, while I appreciate what you said earlier about how I created it for my listeners, I really created it for me because I was desperate.
Well, you know, I think that that's a really good point. My wife and I have actually been talking about this a lot lately, that so much of so much innovation stems from our individual needs to create something to solve a problem that we have. And then ultimately, when you can turn that into something that also serves others, that's like where the real fulfillment comes in. There's sort of the necessity aspect, like I need to do this for me, whether it's financial, emotional, spiritual, psychological, whatever reason you're doing it for you, you're doing it for you. And then now that you understand that there's value to it, you can sit there and it really, really give people a sense of confidence in why you started this thing in the first place and that you truly believe in it. Because so much of what you see now with the changing landscape online is that we've gone from this very curated type of content. Everything needs to be buttoned up, refined, Instagram aesthetic, whatever. I think that still exists in some capacity for some people because I think it resonates with some people. But there's also this really important sort of transition happening around, I want people to be authentic. I don't want somebody to use car salesperson me this. I want to feel like you're telling me to do this or buy this because, or recommending to me that I buy it because you've seen benefits come from that, or recommending that I do this thing because you understand that there's a positive impact. And so you're basically saying, I like the result that I got from this, and I want you to be able to have that result if you want it.
Exactly. I would call that the TikTok phenomenon. Because TikTok is not particularly, you know, cleanly edited and cleanly presented. It's not this, you know, pristine, pure thing. It's, oh, hey, look what I'm doing on my phone. I learned that this cool dance. Watch me. You want to do the dance with me? I mean, it's, you know, it's very, talk about authentic. It's and organic. Oh, my goodness.
It's basically as raw as it can get for video production style type thing.
Exactly.
And people are trying to figure out how to sort of bridge that between the other platforms that aren't necessarily that.
Right, exactly. Which is kind of an odd thing. I mean, apparently they're achieving some success because they continue to do it, but it kind of goes against what the thing was originally. So I'm kind of like reserving judgment, like, you know, is that going to work?
Oh, I'm definitely, I think, healthily skeptical of all of it. I think YouTube's the one that has the kind of the market cornered in long form content.
Right.
And I've seen that TikTok's recently trying to expand more into that. And it's like, you could end up blowing up everything that you've done because that's not why people came here. So
exactly.
Like, I'm kind of just sitting back and observing and waiting to see what happens.
I think we all kind of are. Yeah. That's the nature of the 21st century, the internet today. We're always waiting to see what's the next thing coming along. I mean, artificial intelligence, right? That's the thing that's the topic of conversation for the last couple of years. And it's definitely going to have all kinds of impacts on our world. But we're all kind of wondering, like, okay, so what actually is going to happen with this thing? I mean, how is this thing going to play out? You know, a lot of people worried, like, is this going to take away my job? Is my job now in danger?
To be fair, though, so this is actually interesting, I think, in regard to the nature of why you started your podcast and sort of that place of, necessity. And I think desperation, I've been there. I've been broke and I've been unemployed. I've had to try to find ways to navigate things. And so with that sense of, okay, people might see it as, well, is AI going to take my job? Or is there a way that I can leverage AI
so
that I don't have to do this shitty job that I hate doing and I can do something else because AI is automating the things that don't add value for me. And then I can go do the higher value add things that are more relevant or more fun or more fulfilling for me. And that's where I'm like, I have a, I think, a healthy fear of it. Like it concerns me that everything can be used for evil, but it also makes me feel like there's a lot of hope for people who maybe think, oh, that's not for me, or I can't do that, or I don't know where to begin. It's like, well, what if AI could help you get there? Mm-hmm. And then you can go do the rest because you understand things that this technology never will.
And then there's the unexpected side of it too. I mean, there's so many different perspectives on all of these things, but I think about, for instance, the funny side of AI. Like I encountered it personally. The first time I tried to use it was I tried to have it write a profile, not so much a profile, a description of an upcoming episode that I was doing. I said, okay, here's my guest. Here's, you know, what I know about. Tell me, you know, write something up for me, you know, and here's what I'll use when I'm introducing the guest. And it was great. It was really well written. It was clear and so forth. It was citing all the, you know, the school that the person went to and the work that they did and so forth. The problem was the information was 100% wrong. It was the wrong school. It was the wrong person that was being profiled.
Fact-checking is very important with AI-generated content. I will 100% vouch for that. I am fearful to blindly believe what it tells me, but I do think that that's a really good point. Is I think it can, in a lot of ways, inspire different ways of approaching topics even. So I did an episode with this guest, Richard Rosser, who has a book around how you can leverage something like ChatGPT to help sort of spur creativity. And so, you know, it's not to say like you're not doing any original content or creating anything that's your own, but I do, because I'm somebody who I kind of need a catalyst to inspire my creativity if I'm not just already in that headspace. I think a lot of us can be that way. And so it's like, if it's sort of giving you that nudge, like, hey, what if you thought about it this way? And it could be the smallest thing. It could be a prompt. It could be a paragraph. It could be even, let's say, like, okay, fine, write this thing for me, but I'm not going to use any of this maybe, or maybe I'll consider parts of it. But really, it's like, you gave me an idea that I can then formulate in my own way. And I think that that's such a really, I find fascinating application of it, that until I actually had that conversation with Richard, I probably would have been like, that feels like that's cheating, you know? But it's like, is it if we're inspired by something, you know? And so I think it's kind of interesting to kind of see how we can play either dynamic of it with like the good versus evil AI.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I agree. In fact, I think you're making a great point about checking it and how important that is. Not just because it's important to check it, but because I think that actually reintroduces into the population a skill that's kind of been lost, which is check your sources. People have kind of forgotten about that. I mean, that used to be a thing.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not a thing anymore.
Right. Well, I have friends who are like, they'll tell me something and I'll say, where did you hear that? And if the answer is TikTok and it's only TikTok, I'm like, I think you should double check that, maybe triple check that, confirm it's somewhere else validated with a legitimate source. Because you make an interesting point, Walt, with the proliferation of information and the connectivity that we have now. It's so incredible, but it's also a little concerning with how much trust we put in people we don't know who may or may not have the information right. And I think that leads to a lot of unnecessary confusion and conflict. And so it's like, when you are creating something like the show that you do or what I'm doing here, it's coming from such a place of, you know, genuine curiosity and desire to help people and really wanting to make sure that the things that you're saying are accurate and meaningful and useful. But not everybody has that desire. Some people are just trying to create, well, first of all, some people are just trying to create content to monetize content. Some people are worse yet trying to create content to manipulate people in a more insidious way. And so it's like, if we don't encourage people to, you know, double check that, or, you know, see if that's a reputable source, just, you know, just go like a little step further. I know it feels like a hassle, but wouldn't it be great if you could speak with confidence to the thing that you said and not just point to like whatever this one thing that you heard was that may or may not be valid?
Well, yeah, absolutely. Well, I think you can actually take it a step further too and recognize that it's actually a potential source of pain. massive pain. I mean, you know, you use AI to write something into your resume or to your, you know, your cover letter for a job you're trying to take, and what it writes in is wrong, and then you get hung up on it later on. Like, you know, they hoist you by, well, yeah, but you said this in your application. You know, you're fired because of this. You know, oh, all of a sudden the pain has started to cut in, or you know, what goes on with the world of politics or news for that matter. I mean, how much news today it has the AI generation going on, and how much of it is just totally nonsense. But you don't know that unless you check it. It's well-written nonsense. It's very plausible. But
that's it, right? Oh, yeah, that's such a good point. There is, we latch onto some sense of validity by looking at what we deem to be quality. And whether or not that's actual quality is up for debate, I think, in a lot of cases. And you make another good point there about how it can kind of come back and the phrase that comes to mind is just bite you in the ass.
It does. Yes, exactly. And you get bitten in the ass often enough, you're going to say, okay, I'm going to start checking my work. Leave me alone.
yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, especially because my sister has two kids and they're almost 4 and 6. And my niece, who just started kindergarten this year, has two computers because they don't trust the children to transport them, which I think is wise. So they have one at school and they have one at home. And when I was there for Christmas, she was asking, you know, to use her computer. And so they have these educational programs. It's very limited in like what they can access. But this part of me is like, first of all, why does a kindergartner need a computer? Aren't there just basic functional skills that we should be teaching? But then I'm trying to be like, well, okay, maybe I don't know because I'm not part of the education system. I don't have a young child. It's not like part of my life. So whatever, let's assume that they should have these computers for whatever reason. But it does, I think, create this sense of reliance on the technology to give us the answers instead of allowing sort of for that free form exploration. Now, I will say this with the caveat of, they're probably getting more accurate information in a lot of cases than I did from my outdated library books in my elementary school that were published in the 70s when I was there in the 90s. So like, you know, I think there's a, I think that it goes both ways in terms of like sort of how we're learning. But I'm curious from your perspective, because did you say, are you technically baby boomer generation? I can't remember from our original conversation.
I'm like the tail end of the boomers. Yeah.
Okay, so I'm an elder millennial. So like we're sort of in this space of your generation and my generation have had, I think, just sort of very different perceptions of things because of just the world has been. I speculate that might be the case.
Yeah.
But, you know, one of the conversations that I really enjoyed that we had on your show was challenging that a little bit, I think, between the two of us and sort of sharing our experiences with that. So I'm curious from your perspective as somebody who, even just being on the tail end of the baby boomer generation, like, what is it like for you to sort of witness the way people's lives are transitioning, you know, from what you grew up with and not just as a child, but even through like your, you know, your teens, your 20s, et cetera. I think about how much different my parents' lives were than my own. And so like, I mean, I feel like for you in your generation to come at it and be like, okay, I'm in this headspace. Things are not going well for me. I need to change my life. Like, I think there are a lot of people who are baby boomers who have very much, I was just saying this to my wife yesterday, not specifically about generations, but people who are just like, well, it is what it is. Mm-hmm. What are you going to do about it? Right. Mm-hmm. And it's like, there are some situations where literally it is what it is and there's nothing that you can do to change it. But there are a lot of situations where the power exists within you and you have to be open-minded enough to believe there might be alternative ways of doing things. So that's all a very long-winded way of asking. did it feel at all sort of in conflict with where you were generationally and growing up and kind of your own experience to then transition into this, you know, mindset of abundance and attraction as you were kind of navigating that challenging period of your life?
Sure. Oh, yeah. And in fact, I can say that I kind of straddle my generation in a sense, because on the abundance thing, well, a large chunk of my generation didn't get that either. So it was not like I was out of step. But I was also among the very few in my generation who understood the computer age when it was coming along. your generation, when you started to come of age, you just grasped computers. You grasped
handheld devices. Well, we bridged the gap, right? Yeah. We went from analog to digital, right. And it was like, oh, this is happening, versus my niece who's like, I know computers better than you do, and I'm six.
But you also knew, computers a whole lot better than your parents did or my generation. I mean, my generation was absolutely clueless, totally clueless. Yep, yep. And so I was actually among the few who did get it. I mean, I was one of the few who bought one of the very early PCs and got it and understood it. And I can put that. It on my resume because it just made sense to me. But most of my generation, like, oh my God, if I hit the button, I'm going to blow up the internet. it was that kind of thing.
My mom was afraid of pop-up ads. It was a whole thing, yeah. And it was very tiresome.
Yeah. Well, with my generation, it was more like, learning how to use a mouse. And what was a mouse all about? Why do you need a mouse? Where's the cat come in? I mean, it was that kind of thinking. It was so limited in its understanding. And in fact, that's how I got some of my earliest jobs, was teaching other people to not be afraid of a PC and teaching them how to navigate and how to make sense out of it and so forth. So to come at it from that perspective and then just be a part of the whole crowd watching the whole thing emerge has been exciting. Simultaneously, like you mentioned, the abundance piece, it was also frustrating to see the whole thing emerge and not understand why I wasn't riding along with it. Why wasn't I getting the same benefit that so many other people were getting? I didn't get it.
Yeah.
Couldn't understand. What was I? I mean, I was a pretty good guy. I was pretty smart. I did well in school, all that. Why can't I get this? That was that really just haunted me until I finally had it explained to me, with charts and circles and arrows and all that kind of thing.
Yeah. Was there a specific moment where you felt like it was a memorable turning point for you to really start to have some sort of resonance with the idea of the law of attraction and abundance?
I would love to say yes, but no, it's a very, very slow evolving process. You look back and you
evolution
say-
evolution was the word I was
Evolution's thinking. A good word, yeah. You look back and you say, oh yeah, I guess I did kind of understand more and more over time, but can I say that it happened on July 12th, 2014? No.
Yeah.
It's not the way it worked. The closest I can come to it is, I remember I was aware of The Secret. I started the podcast. A couple years later, I heard about Abraham Hicks for the first time, and I started checking their stuff out. Mm-hmm. That was kind of a seminal moment because they made things a lot more clear than what I was getting out of the other materials. But even that, I can't say, well, that's where all of a sudden everything clicked and everything started to work. It was more like, oh, that's where everything started to make more sense, which isn't quite the same thing.
Yeah, that's a really good point, though, and I can relate to that for sure. I think a lot of people probably can, because in my experience, so I would say for me, the idea of like the law of attraction and really being more conscious of having an abundance mindset is something that is still relatively new for me. Mm-hmm. I would also say that it required me to have a deeper sense of connection to spirituality, but not in a religious sense, more in sort of like the universe and really being conscious of sort of what am I surrounding myself with? What are the things that I'm bringing into my life by choice? What are the things that I need to let go of? Mm-hmm. And so when I lost my mom and I left this really bad relationship, I was at this turning point already where I had started listening to like Alan Watts and more like Zen Buddhist content and just really starting to get to a space of, I want to understand, similar to you, my life is not what I want it to be. Yeah. So it's almost like you can't understand what to do until you understand like, what is it that's contributing to the fact that your life isn't what you want it to be? And understanding what you need to let go so you can make space for what needs to come. And I remember in college, people reading The Secret and telling me about it and me just kind of being like, okay, whatever. Like, I don't really know. And now I'm somebody who like, I believe in synchronicity. I see, the things in my life that are coming together and feels like that is not a coincidence. Mm-hmm. Like it feels like you're on the right path. And so I do believe that there is sometimes a block that we have to let go before we can even begin to implement the actual laws of attraction or the abundance mindset, because we're so trapped in sort of this expectation of what our life has already been. And frankly, I think sometimes it's very easy to feel stuck and think like, this is who I am. This is my life. Like it is what it is. Right. And it's like, but you can make the conscious choice to change that. I like that you pointed out that it isn't just, you know, this moment in time. I think it is, for me, it was a very gradual progression and it's an ongoing evolution.
Yeah. I would say not only is it ongoing, it's also picking up certain pieces along the way. Like one of the biggest pieces I picked up, one of my former co-hosts and good friend, his name is Cindy Chavez. She's a life coach. And Cindy, I don't think she's actually the first one who used this phrase, but she's the one I associate with it. The phrase is radical responsibility, meaning taking responsibility for everything that happens in your life, even when it feels like, well, I didn't do that.
Yeah.
Which is really hard to do.
Oh, it's honestly, I feel like when I was confronted with that moment in therapy about my relationship with my ex, it was a toxic and abusive relationship. And when I was asked sort of to reflect on my participation in that, my accountability for it, I felt sort of offended.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, how dare you?
Exactly. Yeah.
Tell me you don't know that what I was went part through. Of the problem. Yeah. Right. And it's like, so I think after you have to like get over that initial sense of, I think it's ego. It's a defensiveness. Sure. It's this feeling of, I feel attacked for having to be accountable to it.
Right.
And it's like, you're not telling me that I was the reason that there was abuse or that there were these other things that like I did that contributed to this person's behavior. There was enabling for sure on my part, wittingly and unwittingly in certain ways. But then there was also the reality of like, I had to be accountable to myself because I didn't love myself enough that I accepted this relationship for what it was, regardless of all the shit that this other person did. And so who's responsible for me choosing to stay?
Yes.
Me.
Yes.
Now, there's a lot of psychological stuff you have to unwind when there's psychological abuse. So it's like not to be like, well, you should have left. Why didn't you leave sooner, et cetera? Mm-hmm. I've asked myself that question 1,000 times. Mm-hmm. But I think you have to be open to answering that question for yourself before you're ever going to understand that you can and should leave. But also in retrospect, looking back on it and saying like, it's okay that I didn't know that then, but I'm open to learning and understanding and changing now.
Yeah. I have another friend, another co-host, Joel Elston, who's also on the show. He's currently a co-host on the show. And he was actually my 12th interview. So he dates back to the very first year of the podcast. Nice. But he has the same concept as Cindy does, but he phrases it a little bit differently. The way he says it is, all kinds of things happen in life, but you get to decide how you're going to respond to them. How are you going to respond? Mm-hmm. And that's really what you're getting at right there, because we can blame that stuff. We're great at blaming. We are especially blaming ourselves, but also blaming everybody else. I mean, like, you know, get us into a conversation where our emotions are churned up. We'll start pointing fingers so fast, it'll make people's heads spin. Oh, yeah.
I mean, you're so right. I mean, so over the holiday, my dad was in the hospital. He was dealing with, he had gotten COVID and has asthma. So it was, it had just sort of exacerbated things. Yeah. And so it was really challenging because so we lost my mom about almost 3 years ago now. The entire situation has been so challenging because it was super sudden. Mm-hmm. So there's like that kind of context that's necessary before I say what I'm going to say, because this is like the child part of me that's like, I just need to make sure that people know that I grew up in a loving family and that my parents are good people, right? Okay, yes, that said. They weren't equipped with the same emotional tools or intelligence that we have access to now. Mm-hmm. And it's through very intentional learning that I even know anything that I know now.
Sure.
And so while my dad's in the hospital and we've gotten through the like, okay, you're going to be okay. You need to change your habits. You've been a smoker for most of your life.
Oh, yeah.
You have ignored the medical advice to quit.
Yep.
You are asthmatic as well, so it's ridiculous that you smoke in the first place. Mm-hmm. But now this is all compounded, and I was sitting there and I was looking at him. And I could like tell he was like really feeling shameful. Mm-hmm. But instead of being able to express that, in certain moments, he's getting angry about these other circumstances and things like that. And you're like, okay, however, to circle back to what we just said, it's like, but what role did you play in being in this situation? And it's not about being sick and it's not about being at the hospital. It's you were doing all these things knowing on some level, rationally knowing that there could be a negative outcome to doing these things. Mm-hmm. But now that like it's time to sort of pay the piper and be accountable to that, you're like, I'm mad about it. And it's like, well,
and you got every right to be mad at. You can be mad all you want. You are totally entitled to your feelings, regardless of how you got there. They're yours.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's like, so you have to sort of face in the same moment, like the anger that you're in this situation and also the accountability for why you're there. And it doesn't make it easier. And it certainly sucks to have to be like, yes, I contributed to this problem. But when you leave the hospital, what are you going to do differently? Because I know that you're scared and I know you don't want this to happen again. So you're going to keep doing the same things that you've done that made it easier for you to end up here? Or are you going to definitively change the way you approach life and make sure as best you can that this doesn't happen again? And it was one of those moments where I was like, I am parenting my parent and I hate this.
Yes, I totally get that. Yeah. And one of the hardest parts about that is the fact that you don't really have any control over what he decides there.
Which I think was like the hardest part, because I'm sitting there and I'm like, I can say anything I want till I'm blue in the face, but if you're not gonna,
if you're not going to
let it in, that was sort of where we all left it too. It was like, listen, Dad, we all love you. My sister, my aunts, myself, we're telling you that we love you. We're telling you that we care. We're showing up because we want you to know that. But like, literally nobody can make this choice but you. So decide that.
That's the response piece. That's what we were just talking about a moment ago. He's basically faced with, I get to decide how I want to respond now. Which way do I want to respond? On the one hand, he's feeling I have my old patterns that I really like. I don't want to change those. On the other hand, I've got a result I don't like. I really want to change that. He has to decide how he wants to respond. And that's sometimes, sometimes people make the decision not to decide. They just decide, I don't want to have to, which is a default decision, but that's what they decide. I don't want to have to deal with this.
I think that is his default. And that was a very eye-opening conversation for me too, because after having kind of a week's worth of these discussions in as gentle yet firm of a way as possible, you know, there were a couple of moments that I had when I came back home and I'm experiencing this sense of, you know, I want a different result, but am I changing my behavior? And then I'm like, oh, you got to practice what you're preaching then, don't you? Like, you
can't sit there and be like,
well, you're not doing what I'm suggesting to you. And this is obviously the way that you should approach it if you want to live a better, happier life, but you're not doing it. And meanwhile, I'm like, I don't know. Do I want to change my life in that way? And it's like, yes, you do. And I think that, you know, I love that you're so candid about your own experience and why you started the podcast too, Walt, because I think it's really easy to, at least for me, and tell me if I'm wrong in terms of like your own experience with it. But I think especially when it comes to things like financial security and the emotionality attached to that, that it can be like really hard to open up about that and to feel like the shame about it and to give space to it, because I think some of us tend to recoil when we think too much about it, when in reality, like you basically were able to say, my life is, I'm in trouble right now with my financial situation in my life, with my work, with the way things are going. And my choice is either to continue to like exist in that. And as you said, just not decide, let life decide for you. Yeah. Or, you know, Nicole, my wife and I just recently did a 12-week coaching program. And one of the things that I love is like, don't leave your life up to chance. And it's like, that's basically what you did. You were like, I'm taking control of my life. So did it feel vulnerable for you to kind of just go down that new path?
Well, of course. And I'll be honest, I don't think anybody, I mean, you speak for yourself on this one, but from my own observations, I don't think anybody does it all or nothing. I think we just kind of do it little bits. You know, take a little step, you know, two steps forward, one step back, you know, one step forward, two steps back sometimes. I mean, it can work either way.
Yeah, for sure.
But you try to make little shifts, little changes, because the big shifts can feel like they're too much. Mm-hmm.
That's
especially
a good point.
If you've been living that habit, whatever that habit is that is working against you, if you've been living that long enough, man, that's a lot to shift. That's a whole lot.
You're right.
So you have to kind of do like a little piece of it here, a little piece of it there, kind of, you know, erode it away until finally you get to a point where you feel like you have that tipping point and all of a sudden you're shifting in a big way. Well, you've been eroding it for the last 5 years. That's why you got to the tipping point in the first place. But the fact is you're doing it in little pieces. Because if you try to do it all at once, my God, it's just impossible, it seems. It just seems so overwhelming.
Well, it's so overwhelming.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
There it is. That's the word.
Yeah. So what was it for you as you were gaining traction with the podcast? Like you said, you did it for you. You were really starting to learn from all the people that you were able to share conversations with. Was there any point where you noticed maybe like the compounding effect of everything that you were doing was starting to actually pay off?
I think I noticed it again in pieces. I mean, we talked about a moment ago how things, you make the little changes in pieces. And I think one of the reasons we do that is when we make little tiny changes, we feel little tiny results. And so we start adding up, we start collecting this compendium of, well, here's all the evidence that shows that my changes are paying off.
Yeah.
And you get, and over time, that gives you more and more confidence to go further and further outside of the comfort zone. Because that's really what we're dealing with. We're trying to get ourselves to do something that's very, very uncomfortable, that we believe is going to make things better, but that goes completely against what we've been doing all along. And that's not just uncomfortable. That's often painful. It's scary. It can often feel like you're like going against society or going against your family or your friends or something like that. I mean, you're often busting through a lot of barriers. And that's what makes it so difficult and so challenging. And then when you go through all of them, then you look back and say, oh, the barriers were really in me, weren't they? Oh, well.
Yeah. Well, I love that you just said that too about sort of, I mean, the barriers being within you for sure. And also the piece about how uncomfortable it can be, you know, because so there's a guest that I have, their book is called The Comfort Zone. And something that she said to me in an exchange that we had leading up to us booking was about it not necessarily being, you know, as much about getting out of your comfort zone as it is. Initially, it's about getting out of your comfort zone, but it's doing that so that you can expand your comfort zone so that there are more things that feel like they make sense to you or align to you and what you're doing. And so for you to grow, you have to go beyond your comfort zone. But then ideally, if it's something you care about and you want to keep doing, then you continue to let that into your comfort zone rather than being like, this is my comfort zone. It's always this big and nothing else can come into it. Like, I loved that idea of allowing ourselves to embrace the expansion of our comfort zone.
That's it. That's a good way of describing it. Embracing the expansion of it. One of the things that we learned from the more spiritual teachers, the Abraham Hickses of the world, other channelers and so forth, is that we come into this world to experience expansion. And I remember the first time I heard that, I said, what are we, a balloon? I mean, what's going on? What's doing the expanding here anyway? I'm just really curious. But of course, it's the expansion of knowledge and understanding and you know, all that good, you know, juicy informational stuff. That's what we're expanding. And in the process, that information, it isn't just metaphorical. It isn't just an idea. It's material. It's physical. It's experiential. And as a result, it plays out as real world, seemingly what we call the 3D real world stuff happening. I've never totally figured out exactly what that feels like from what's often called the non-physical viewpoint or the 5D viewpoint or whatever you want to call it, the pure spiritual high love. I don't care what you call it. I've never quite figured out what that feels like from that viewpoint, because that viewpoint supposedly is all 100% love. Everybody feels great, high vibration all the time. You know, so what do you actually learn from the low vibrational experiences? They're learning something. Yeah. They like it. They can't take their attention off of it. So I know that they're getting stuff out of it. I just don't know exactly how that comes through when you're in that perspective.
When did you start to consider more that concept of vibration and the idea of the experiences that we have sort of falling into a higher or lower realm of that?
I think I got vibration with The Secret, because The Secret does talk about it. And then Abraham Hicks really clarified it for me. It took me a little while, because at the time I considered that to be a real woo-woo kind of a term. And of course, you know, you want to stay away from the woo-woo because that's really scary. It's amazing to me how vibration is like, it's part of, you know, popular conversation. You say vibration, people say, oh, yeah, I get that. Like, really? Oh, okay.
Ten years ago,
that was like, you know, that was like being out on the far edge. Now it's like part of the mainstream conversation, which is cool.
Yeah. It's super cool. I feel like I was totally somebody who was very skeptical of all of the terminology, would have 100% used the phrase that something felt or seemed woo-woo. I think there are still some things where I'm like, I'm more open-minded and I don't want to be denying anything that I don't understand. However, there are certain things that I might be more skeptical of until proven otherwise. And I do think that there is a balance of, you know, what is relevant in our lives right now, where can we apply it, and how do those things affect us day to day versus sort of getting caught up in this idea of there's something bigger and everything you're doing now doesn't really matter. Like, it does mm-hmm. matter in the context sure. of, as you said, this 3D world, but it just might have maybe a different implication than we originally thought, or even the idea of, I think so many people hate the idea of something happening, everything happening for a reason. I don't know that maybe that's the best phrasing of it, because nobody wants to be like, yes, I was in that, you know, terrible situation for a reason. But I will say my greatest growth came from the most impactful moments of extreme discomfort. So yeah. It's like, I'm if the you. Reason was so yeah. I could grow, then I can accept that reason. But it doesn't mean that I'm like, you know, if given the choice, would I go back and relive those horrible experiences if I could have had the same growth without them? No, I wouldn't. But it does, as I said, sort of push you into the present and force you to confront the things that you do have control over and decide if you want to navigate differently or kind of throw your hands in the air and say, okay, well, you know, this is just where I exist. And I think a lot of people in that sort of lower vibrational way are the people who are stuck in a sense of victimhood or trapped in these life circumstances that maybe feel like they couldn't get better. But my question always becomes, are you actively trying? Mm-hmm. You know, because I think the big question is, are you even doing anything to get out of it? Because if you're doing a bunch of things and it's not working, that can be demotivating, as you were sort of saying, like, you know, I'm doing all these things and I feel like I'm in the right place, but why not? And it's like, okay, there was something else to learn. But there are also the people who just choose not to try and are going to sort of, you know, be mad at the world for their own circumstances.
What you just said also ties into what you said a moment ago about, you know, why would I put myself into a situation like this? I mean, there's a school of thought that says we predetermine everything what we're going to do in this lifetime. Yeah. We have these soul contracts and all this kind of thing. And I've always been kind of on the fence about that. Like, I kind of lean toward the idea that, yeah, we did kind of make these agreements coming in, but not totally. The way I think about it more is I don't think most people choose to, you know, come into a life where they're going to be raped, assaulted, beaten up, killed. They're, you know, all these horrible things happening, you know, their hands were burned when they were infants. You know, I can't really buy into the idea that people said, yes, I'm going to live that life. I can hardly wait.
Yeah. No, I think we have similar thoughts around that.
But I can buy into the idea that, well, maybe we came into a life saying, okay, I'm going to roll the dice. I'm going to see what happens. I don't necessarily know how it's going to play out. I know there's a very good likelihood that something's going to play out that I don't like. And I'm going to do my best to try to navigate yeah. around that. But I'm not doing it. It's kind of like a game of chicken. Yeah. You know, like I'm going to join this. I'm going to play the game, but good luck trying to pin me to the wall here because it's not going to work. I'm going to do my best to avoid that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that to yeah. me makes more sense to me. Because one thing that I have come to really totally buy into is something that is 100% diametrically the opposite of what I used to believe. You mentioned coincidence before. To me, the idea was that there were so many mere coincidences in the world. Now I believe that there's no such thing as a mere coincidence. I believe that all coincidences are all synchronistic. They're all connected. I just don't yeah. necessarily know what they mean. But yeah, just because yeah, I don't know what they mean doesn't mean that they aren't all connected. It's just that I don't know what the meaning is. That's all. But that's 100% different from where I was. I used to believe just the opposite of that. You know, so how did I get to that space? How did I get into that place? Well, I came to realize that regardless of whether or not I liked what happened, I must have at least decided to come here without necessarily knowing what was going to happen. I mean, there's a lot of theories about, well, we don't allow ourselves to remember what happened in the past. If you believe in past lives, we aren't allowed to experience that. Well, is it that we're not allowed to, or we choose not to? Well, if I choose not to, why isn't it also possible that I choose not to know what's going to happen when I come in? Mm. And it creates kind of a sense of randomness in a sense. It's not actual randomness, but it feels like it. It feels like yeah. randomness. And that to me explains best what I think goes through, what goes on around here in this life.
Yeah. That's really interesting. I love that perspective. I agree with you on sort of the soul contract thing. This is something that in the last like probably year or two that has come up in content that I've consumed or things my wife and I have talked about. And I like the idea of I mean, I believe that there is definitely the aspect of a soul within us, you know, and I think for me, growing up Catholic, I had no sense of real like spirituality or religion. I didn't care about it. I was just like going to the things that I was told to go to and doing the things that I was told to do. And I didn't care. And so for me, finding my own sense of spirituality meant really exploring and trying to understand what is out there and what is it that people are believing or being told. And something that has my wife and I had been consuming for a while was like near-death experience stories. Mm-hmm. And so that sort of felt really validating that a lot of people speak to these experiences of kind of crossing over to this other plane, the spiritual plane, and like having very, very similar experiences, but in ways that were sort of unique to the person. And so that's why I agree with you with like, I do believe that there is something to that. And I do think that if our souls have lived multiple lives, it's completely reasonable to believe that. And whether those lives are strictly human lives or otherwise, you know, I think there's sort of this threshold of skepticism that I have when it comes to like how far off the deep end it feels to me. But knowing full well that I have no way of knowing whether or not it's true. So like, I don't want to be fully denying something, but I also want to be open-minded to the idea of like, okay, maybe we do choose to come here and have certain experiences. Again, to your point, maybe not like, I think there is a randomness in the sense of there are some things that feel maybe definitively out of our control, or I mean, everything I guess is sort of out of our control, but it's sort of like, the repercussion of some of these really horrible experiences that people have, it's like what you're saying, correct me if I'm wrong, is sort of, I'm agreeing that whatever happens to me, I will do my best to navigate that in whatever way I've predetermined I will try to do,
right,
versus somebody who's like, I'm here, all these bad things have happened and I'm doing like literally nothing about it. And it's like, those are the people that are going to relive soul cycles. That's sort of silly since it's like a biking class in LA, but it's like these
I like that. That's good.
These cycles for the soul, right? Where it's like they're the idea that like you have to learn something to sort of graduate to the next level of what your soul's going to do. Yeah. And I've always said to people, I feel like an old soul. And it really makes me wonder, like, was there something previously that I'd lived that makes me feel that way? Mm-hmm. In fact, arguably, I actually feel like if that were the case, I feel like it was in the 60s, maybe like 50s, 60s ish. And that like, I might have been pretty young and that like that ended. And then I came back around pretty quickly because of how connected I feel to like those generations and wanting to understand things and like really feeling connected to it. The other side of it is that my parents are baby boomers and my mom, you know, I grew up listening to the music and all of those things, but there's something in my soul that literally feels like sort of attached to that in a way. Mm-hmm. And I can't shake that. And so it's like, when I have that feeling, and then I'm also gaining this information about other people's stories, it sort of allows you the freedom to explore the possibilities. And I think to your point, it's really easy for us to shut that down because of what perception from society is. Mm-hmm. But like, what if we played with that a little bit? What if we gave ourselves the space to be like, I wonder, what if?
Well, that one if is really the source of all creativity and it's the source of all curiosity. Mm-hmm. That's a statement of curiosity, actually. What if, you know, that's how curious thought processes begin. Well, what if I did this? What if that happened? What if I experienced that? What if somebody did this?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and it's funny because, I mean, even just with how either of us, I'm sure, got onto this journey where we're sitting behind a mic and having these conversations with people, it's like, what if I did that? Mm-hmm. What if I just tried? What if I, you know, invited people on and had these conversations? I mean, the amount of personal growth that, you know I've experienced and from what you're sharing with me, you've experienced, it's profound. And so if this is something that I agreed to in another realm at some point, I think I did a pretty good job. I feel good about it.
Great. Yeah. Congratulations. Well done. I know in my case, part of it is also it's serendipitous. I mean, I don't really necessarily know what's going to, when I started the podcast, I did it mainly for myself. And for a number of years, I mean, I had like, you know, 20 listeners an episode or something like that. So I didn't think about it. And then one day I got an email from a listener and I said, wait a minute, I have listeners? Where did they come from? That wasn't part of the plan here.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. I'm doing a podcast, you know? And then I started getting hundreds of them. I said, oh my God, wait a minute. These people actually care about what I'm doing here? This is really wild. But my initial intention had nothing to do with listeners. It really had no, listeners were not part of the plan. They just kind of, they just kind of went along with it. They came along.
Well, you're tapping into a need.
Yeah.
You're tapping into a need that people have, right? Like it's the people who are curious, who are for sure, like, you need to be curious if you're going to listen to your show, because you're gaining such like a vast amount of information.
Oh yeah.
And I think similar to mine, where it's like, maybe not every episode's going to resonate with everybody. I get that. But to your point, it's not, I think it's really helpful to understand what listeners gravitate towards, the type of content that they want, that they're engaged with, and also to not totally limit yourself based on that. Because the other thing is that there is a lot of room, I think, as we said, for expansion of knowledge. And so maybe as a listener, you don't even know what you want to hear until you've heard it.
Exactly. Yes. That's the organic side of it. Right?
Because
the organic side is the side that says, here's something that I resonate to. There's something I don't resonate to. Which one am I going to pay attention to? Well, I'll pay attention to the one I resonate with.
Right.
And that's what we do.
Yeah. Algorithms have a good way of navigating that for us sometimes. And then other times I'm like, this seems completely off base. I don't know what you think I was doing here.
Right. That's wrong. Somebody got it wrong this time.
Yeah. You're like, did I like the wrong video? Yeah. So as you know, we've been saying with your show, you know, you've been doing this for a while. You also have co-hosts. How did you decide that you were going to bring other people into the conversation with you?
Well, that came again out of the same thing, personal need. It's just that the personal need had migrated by that point. By that point, I had learned a lot. I'd learned a whole bunch about how LOA works. I was starting to implement it in my life. I was gaining some results along the way, getting reinforcement, evidentiary reinforcement. So it was all starting to make some more sense. And then I had the unexpected part. There's always an unexpected part. For me, the unexpected part was, wow, this is fun. I'm having great. I didn't expect that part. This is solving a problem. This is, I've got a financial chaos going on here. I got to do something about it. So I started doing something and it was fun. And, you know, after you do the same topic, even Law of Attraction, you do 300 or 400 episodes, you feel like you covered it. How many different ways you could talk about this thing, right? But I didn't want to stop. In fact, I wanted to expand it. I was doing it once a week. I wanted to do it like, 5 days a week. Because I was getting so much energy out of it. You know what it's like. You do these and it's like, these are energy builders for us.
I mean,
hopefully they are for our audiences too. But for us, it's like, oh my God, I got to get my daily dose. I got to have this because, man, this is what fuels me.
Yeah. It's definitely an emotional high and I think energetic high. To your point, it's the vibration. It's palpable. I think even just when you and I first spoke and joining the conversation, it was just like, oh, okay, this is somebody I can very easily engage with. So I imagine, like you said, kind of going into, you know, several hundred episodes, and you're like, we've kind of covered the topic. So it's time to grow with it.
Exactly. And that's what I had to figure out. Okay, how do I grow this? And the ultimate decision I made was, well, Law of Attraction touches every area of life. So I'll just make the conversation about life. And that just kind of opened up to all kinds of possibilities after that.
Yeah.
So that's how I explained it for myself. But ultimately, that's the kind of decision we have to make. You know, what do I want to do next? What's my next, especially if it's something that you love?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's really the challenge. If you find something that you love, you master it, then what?
Yeah, for sure. I'm curious, did the podcast become your business, or was it more of a gateway into you figuring out the other aspects of your life that would become like the income generating side of it for you?
Yeah, it didn't become the business. I actually did go down that path. I looked into monetization and so forth. I actually tried a few things. And what I realized was every time that I did that, it was cheapening the quality of the experience for me.
I understand that.
So I didn't want to do that anymore. I wanted to, because I was just getting so much, I couldn't apply a price tag to it, but I was getting so much value out of it, tremendous amounts of value out of it. And I didn't want to ruin that. So, I mean, I get a little bit of coffee money out of it by, you know, having all my guests come through Podmatch, but that's about it. The rest of it is just, I do it for that. And, you know, the improvements that happen in my life happen in other areas of you know, my business life and career life and so forth. And the nice thing is they didn't have to happen in the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Thank goodness.
Yeah, I get that.
you know, we have a lot of diversity in this world. That diversity paid off for me in that way.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I really respect where you're coming from with that part of your journey too, because I think that, you know, we often get asked the question, like, what would you do if money were no object, right?
Yeah.
Because that's the thing that you're truly passionate about. And right. My wife and I have had this conversation a lot recently, and this is the thing that I would do regardless of whether it's generating income or not. And I think that it's really difficult. At first when I was doing this, because I left my tech job and I'm like, okay, like I need to monetize the podcast. No, I need to monetize something.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Good.
I need to monetize something.
Right.
Now I don't have a problem that the podcast is monetized as well.
Sure.
That's great. Yeah. Cool. Awesome. in fact, amazing. But the thing that you, just pointed out, I think is really important to emphasize is that if you're compromising what feels right about it for the thing that really does have a point of diminishing returns, that extrinsic motivator,
right,
then you're going to sort of sour your experience with the thing that you truly care about. I have a friend who loves photography and said as soon as he started doing it professionally, didn't want to do it anymore.
Exactly.
What a shame,
yeah.
Right? So it's like you have to trust that there is something in you that knows that and allow mm-hmm. space for it. And I think that it's very easy for people to just kind of want to build on what they already have and make that the thing. I speak from my own experience with that. But similar to yourself, like I have other tools and other experiences mm-hmm. that I can leverage and put right. out into the world elsewhere. So regardless of where this is or where this goes, there's always another option. There's always another way. And I think it sort of speaks overall to the idea of law of attraction and having a life of abundance is that yeah. you need to be open to the potential, because
right.
if all you're doing is going, this is the thing, this is the thing, this is the thing, you're blocking out potentially other opportunities.
A huge
and
way.
It's mm-hmm. yeah. 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 I really love that you said that. I appreciate you sharing that, 'cause it's also validating.
Good. I'm glad it helps. That's the best part, right? We get to do these shows and you know, other people benefit. Like, oh, this is wonderful. Not only am I benefiting, but you're benefiting too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Love that.
Yeah. Well, I had a guest on, he was saying, it's really amazing when you have connections and conversations like this, because we fundamentally can change the way the other person exists in the world. Even if it's like just at a small scale, it's like the thing that you said that just validated something for me that I've kind of been grappling with internally, right? It's like now this conversation is part of my data input that's helping me sort of navigate that path. And I feel like those sort of micro moments in life when you were talking about sort of seeing the evidence and collecting that and really establishing like, what are the good things that are contributing to where I'm going in my growth and the life that I want? Like, it's so, so valuable to pause and experience gratitude for those things as well. Like, that's been such a massive shift in the way that I show up in the world in a way of like attracting more for myself.
I love that. Good for you. And I also love the fact that when we're looking at this process, we don't have to look at it in a way that says, well, I need to put it out there so that Nikki can get this.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have to worry about that.
Yeah.
All I have to do is just work on my stuff and share with you what I'm doing, and you take out of it what you need.
Yes. Yes.
It's not
yes.
up to me to manipulate you. Okay, Nikki's got to get this one little piece of information. I don't even know what the piece of information is. I mean, how can I possibly even pick the right one to manipulate for that matter?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And I can't remember if it was the conversation that we had had when I was on your show or possibly with another podcaster or maybe both, but sort of the idea that also, you know, you don't know what point in an episode is going to resonate with somebody.
Right.
So if you're like, well, I only ever do 30 minute episodes and I will never go like a minute over 30 minutes. And that nugget of gold was coming at 31.
Yeah.
You're like, let the conversation flow if it's flowing, you
That's
know,
right.
give space to that. And I mean, obviously time boxing is important and, you know, making sure that we're valuing our time and everyone else's. But I think that it's really wonderful to share the mic with you again, to have a free flowing conversation, to go into these topics that are really instrumental in our growth. And also they're not so rigid. They're thoughtful. And also I think sometimes the biggest changes and the biggest impacts happen when we are just dialoguing for the sake of having the conversation instead of being like, my goal for this conversation is this specific outcome with you.
I think part of that has to do with who each of us has become. I mean, through my experience of my podcast, through your experience with your podcast, or you were talking earlier about the therapy you went through, all the different life experiences we've gone through, we have both of us gotten to the point in our lives where we're able to free flow with somebody else. Free flowing meaning I don't have a particular agenda. I don't have something that I need you to do. I'm not trying to find something that my audience has to do. I'm just going with it and enjoying it and feeding into it and getting out of it. Getting stuff in, getting stuff out at the same time. And when you're doing both like that with no particular agenda in mind, that's when the cool stuff happens. You just don't know what in advance what it's going to be.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm excited to see what listeners take out of this episode. Walt, I have enjoyed this conversation as I've enjoyed all of our conversations. So thank you for joining me. You know, as we're kind of rounding out the episode here, I do want to let listeners know that they can find your show. You do lives Mondays and Wednesdays, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm doing two shows on Monday now and one on Wednesday. I kind of shifted the schedule around because I wanted to have more days to do other stuff. I'm not that I don't love doing the podcast, but I had other things I wanted to do too. So I wanted to get books in. So I do it that way.
So people can catch LOA Today live on Mondays from 4 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time with Anne-Marie Young. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yep.
And then 7 to 8 p.m. Eastern Time with Joel Esten. And then Wednesdays from 4 to 5 Eastern with Jody Lynn Craven. And if you haven't tuned in yet, definitely do. You can go back and find the episodes that Walt and I did together. You know, speaking from my own experience on LOA Today, I can guarantee you that the conversations are dynamic and engaging. So you can find those on YouTube as playbacks and then also wherever you get your podcasts. But Walt, is there anywhere else you want people to find you or any message you want to leave our listeners with?
Would you like to do my PR for me? You do a great job.
I'm happy to.
Yeah. Damn, you're good. I think the only message I want to leave people with is have fun. This is a fun life. It took me years to figure that part out. Probably took me over 50 years to figure that out and put myself through some really rigorous crap as a result. But you know what? This life is fun if we allow it to be. We just have to allow it. Have fun.
Yes. Yes. Have fun. The power of play is really profound if you just give yourself space with it.